Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Society experienced a rapid digital adoption by consumers during the pandemic, and it's continuing today. As consumers evolve into more digitally savvy users, they're expecting their service providers to offer an equally sophisticated approach to keeping their accounts safe. In today's podcast, we explore why protecting new accounts and preventing unauthorized access to existing accounts remains paramount. We also delve into 3D Secure's critical role in the marketplace today, as well as the impact fraud is having on the industry overall. Joining me today is Erica Dietrich, Vice President of Global Fraud Prevention Risk Services at ACI Worldwide, and John Bizard, Lead Analyst of Fraud and Security at Javelin Strategy and Research. Erica, we have a lot to unpack today, but I want to start off and really talk about this change in consumer shopping behavior that we've witnessed over the past few years. With this enhanced shopping behavior that's fueled by innovation to adopt the convenience-first approach, what's the aftermath of this revolution in payments, considering that consumers are not falling back on more analog in-person means?
Absolutely. The digital adoption has pretty much doubled, if not more, since the pandemic. And consumers continue to adopt digital methods of paying or just looking for ways to purchase goods or pay their bills or obtain services and even banking. Everything has largely become digital. For example, I recently purchased a car. The only thing that I did physically in person was drive the car at one time. After that, the dealership and I transacted and communicated via mobile phone. So the legal agreement was done over my mobile phone, the loan done over my mobile phone, insurance, and DMV. Everything was done over my mobile phone. So, you know, from not only our purchasing of retail goods and services, but the way that we pay our bills, the way that we do legal agreements and loans, that's all become very, very digital. And what that really essentially means for merchants and consumers is we must really move fast and adopt these payments and different ways of paying really quickly in an agile, open, orchestrated solution that enables the consumers to have a seamless journey that doesn't have friction across any channel, click and collect, or virtual reality. And again, we are really just continuing to scratch the surface of the capabilities, what consumers will want to pay, how they will pay, and really the digital digitization of our lives. And that's a tongue twister, for sure.
Don, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, thinking about this, even as the fact that we're all consumers, one of the things that I have noticed that I find incredibly annoying, and it's something that is addressable in the marketplace for organizations that want to do it, I kind of call it the duplication of inconvenience, in the sense that when you enter like an IVR and you enter your date of birth and your social and what other qualifiers there might be, you eventually find yourself sometimes during a customer journey in front of a representative of that company, and then it's all repeated again. And it might even be repeated to the extent that you, as a consumer, are wondering, does this company have their act together? And so I think it's really important to not just think of seamless client experiences like this platitude or verbal cliche that we can slip into sometimes, but it's really important. I can tell you right now, I'm a great cart abandonment person as well. No merchant Erica wants to hear that, but if I tell myself sometimes, even when I go to the grocery, you might agree, do I really need this that badly? Like, do I want to spend the extra 15, 20 minutes or whatever kind of happens? Sometimes the answer is, hey, I'm out the door and I'll get this later if it's really important. Same thing with kind of what we're talking about conceptually.
Some may argue that we have 3D Secure in the marketplace today to help stabilize and protect digital payments. This is a great program, but what other considerations must be discussed? Eric, I'll start with you.
Yeah, 3D Secure 2.2 has been a great advancement, and it's been a great advancement for specific countries. And if the bank has adopted the newer APIs and the way to collect the data from not only the merchant, but the consumer. So it's really important that not only merchants, but consumers really have a seamless experience. And, you know, hearing you state cart abandonment, you know, if 3D Secure 2.x is not implemented correctly, it can certainly cause cart abandonment if the consumer doesn't want to go through the friction process. it is hugely important that merchants are adopting and utilizing sophisticated tools such as your behavioral components, your device components, your geographic location, IP address, to collect that information to ensure that the consumer doesn't have friction, doesn't have to put their password in, because all of that compelling information reduces the friction for that end user, because the issuer and the acquirer have a lot of confidence that that consumer is who they say they are when they're going through the buying process. So it is certainly a great added feature and capability, but it really comes down to the region as well as the bank and ensuring that they are accepting all these key fields appropriately and efficiently. Again, to really reduce that friction, it's not necessarily about detecting and preventing fraud. It's about adding qualifying data points to reduce that friction and have a fast and easy approval process.
I like the way you worded that, Erica, because for me, it's something that we often say to clients at Javelin is it is bricks in the wall. We can call it a layered approach. You can call it many different things. But it also comes down to the quality of the bricks in the wall as well, and the fact that you have to make smart decisions with an array of tools. There is just not one specific thing. But I like the fact that you're taking into consideration capabilities like geolocation, linked to, you know, mobile device ID. You're a huge mobile consumer. I personally do not even own a laptop anymore. My phone is kind of everything. I never thought I'd really see that day coming, but it just kind of slipped up on me in the sense that I just consume that way and bank that way. And I'm always frustrated when I can't. You know, there's just some functionality that you just can't do through an app. But I think it's really important for people to just come to the conclusion it's not one thing, it's several things. And it's not even, Erica, to me, like, it's not the fact that we're technologists selling products here. It's just the way that business has to be done now in order to create that ultimate experience that keeps people coming back and kind of, you know, sometimes people say a cult-like movement to use or patronize a business. This is part of it. It just, you know, you can't lock the door on good customers. You know, the whole focus is let's keep the bad guys out and let the good guys in.
You both spoke about the friction that we all experience in the shopping process. I'd like to talk a little bit about making multiple platform users safer. As consumers, we all have multiple credentials to manage, and part of the issues experienced by corporates and consumers alike is the urge to repurpose credentials. But Erica, to start, are mandates enough to ensure a frictionless journey?
No, mandates are not enough. Mandates are really the first step to support ideal, secure society, but there's a lot more to it. Consumers are shopping in various ways. They're paying their bills in various ways. To get a favorable experience, we really need to ensure, or just merchants need to ensure, to adopt what is more common. But the governments are going to impose different types of mandates, and we see that across different countries time and time again. And merchants that want to transact globally really need to become quickly educated or work with a vendor that can really act quickly to add these different types of authentication and verification steps that either are mandated or that a merchant is deploying to ensure that they don't have account takeover, or that when a new account is established, they have that trust and security. And, you know, referencing the example that I provided earlier when I had to buy a new car, I had a different way to authenticate and verify who I was with my insurance company. I had a different method for the loan agency, and I had a different method for the DMV. Now, myself as a consumer, I went through three different authentication and verification processes for those different platforms through those providers. One was voice, one was a PIN, and one was my biometrics, my face. And going through that experience and being on this podcast, you know, it would be ideal if there was, you know, an easier or more consistent way that this was done across all of those platforms. But, you know, a utopian society may not occur for us anytime soon. But let's see what our future holds for us.
It's a big challenge, I think, when you consider, well, Erica, you may do this too. I probably in the course of a week touch more than a dozen interfaces in my personal life, banking, entertainment, you know, all of those things, including ways to pay, as they become more and more integrated. And I think people notice too that now it's like a snap. If you want to pay with PayPal, it's there. If you want to, you know, take an Uber and use Apple Pay, Shazam, you've got it. But there's also this lurking menace in the background of repurposed, oversimplified, and highly sought after credentials that are just out there a dime a dozen. You know, when you, in the criminal marketplace, if you can buy 1,000 data dumps that contain most of the assimilated pieces of your identity for a couple $100s, you know, that's a challenge that we're all faced with immediately as part of this. And so this idea about mandates and meeting them, I'm going to use a Hello Dolly song term here. The parade has kind of passed us by the time you meet a mandate. And I think that technologists have to take a really big paintbrush and dream a little further out to kind of encompass what's going to happen. Because it worries me when we just keep meeting the minimum without thinking about what else is happening in the world. Because eventually, even things that are happening outside of the United States will eventually come here. We're rather slow in the adoption process, but as we see other things happening, we're going to get those, both problems and great solutions mixed together. It's just, you know, where do you begin?
John, to your point, today card skimming, bot attacks, and other types of fraud threats have really evolved in more complex scenarios. Erica, what are you seeing from a trend perspective?
Since COVID, identity theft, farming, phishing, whaling, it really took a hockey stick approach, unfortunately. My personal belief that why this occurred, when individuals were not able to leave their homes, whether it be fraudulent individuals or just anyone, they had a lot of time on their hands and they became very proficient on how to commit fraud in their comfort of their own home. So that's where the hockey stick approach of identity theft and account takeover really has risen since then. And 1 in 700 fraudsters are essentially caught when they're committing identity theft. So not only is this easy for them to create synthetic identities or commit card skimming or bot attacks, they can do it in the comfort of their own home. They're not often prosecuted whatsoever, and they make a lot of money doing this. And as a result of this unfortunate trend that we continue to see, we need to ensure that when we are validating a consumer, we are looking at things about who they are, how we can confirm using multitude of data points and comparing those data points, because it needs to be done in an orchestrated way. And as John stated, it needs to be done in a way that not only complies with mandates, but is also really innovative and keeps us ahead of the curve and keeps us ahead of where we need to ensure that we can mitigate trends and behaviors and look at that across all the channels without, unfortunately, enduring any friction.
There are some really large numbers that I'll just throw out here just for conversation's sake, because they're very significant. We have for 20 years at Javelin tracked identity fraud, obviously, with our long-term study. It changes every single year, but this particular study year, $43 billion in estimated losses across 40 million U.S. adults. That's pretty enormous. But when you distill those numbers down further, Erica, we have we're estimating an $11 billion account takeover problem. And it's kind of exactly the same as the last study year. We literally had about the same loss figures year over year. That tells me that there's much work and improvement to be done. And I think also about synthetic identity, even though it's not something that we track here, that is a problem that practitioners face all the time, dealing with it, figuring out if they have it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I completely agree, John. And just on that point, you know, being in a merchant fraud area for well over 20 years, in my experience, fraud has traditionally hit the travel sector, gaming, digital download, entertainment. I'm now seeing in my career supporting fraud prevention solutions and digital identity solutions across the banking and merchant and the biller platforms. I'm now seeing identity theft, account takeover, synthetic identity now really going on to the bill payment side. It's something in my career that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I'd never really thought occurred. But to your point exactly, fraudsters are using these synthetic identities or taking over genuine consumers' identities to commit fraud in other areas. And no site is left alone. They are committing this type of fraudulent behavior across many different sectors and across different ways that consumers are paying.
Yeah, and I mean, think about the problems across the pond with authorized push payment fraud, which you mentioned payments, that kind of felt like a problem other people were having. Now in the United States, we're feeling the bite more. And as we kind of go through this, you know, reinvigoration of the payment system, and as we love to say, faster payments, et cetera, the challenge is going to be bigger. It's, you know, as more development, I think, comes out, there will be more challenges around it.
You've touched upon this a bit, Erica. You know, identity fraud wears many hats. The financial services industry is struggling with synthetic fraud or frankenfraud, and the same can be said of the term friendly fraud. Wanted to get your thoughts on that, especially as we're using lots of different variations of this, which can often also be grouped together.
Yeah, so the identity fraud is where somebody is either stealing your identity completely, or synthetic identities where I steal pieces of John's identity and I create a net new email address with John loves to shop, and then I have a burned phone that has his area code, but it's not his phone, and then I'm transacting online, and if a merchant calls to verify me as John, I'm answering a phone saying that I'm John and I'm responding in email that I am John. Or friendly fraud, in my view, and yes, there are many different kind of views of what this is. Friendly fraud is where a consumer might have buyer remorse, or they might have bought something and wore it for a couple months, maybe worn tour a little bit more than they thought, or they just want a new fashion line for this new spring season or summer, and they're returning something, and the merchant's looking at it saying, well, you know, I can't put this back in inventory. That's essentially friendly fraud. Or another form of friendly fraud is where somebody might be abusing terms and policies that the merchant might have. These can be kind of coined or referred to as return abuse or coupon abuse or did not receive abuse. So there's many different forms of these types of fraud trends and behavior. And, you know, really collecting data and collecting information about comparing where the consumer is sitting versus where they say they are and their digital identity, that being their name to email to address verification. If you have all that evidence and a consumer is committing friendly fraud or dispute fraud, all that evidence that is compiled can obviously be used during the chargeback dispute process or the representment process, and really just let the customer know you can make an exception once or twice, but maybe three or four times, and then there might have to be some policies put into place. What are your thoughts, John?
Well, I was thinking that, you know, you're spot on with the solution is really locked in profuse amounts of data collection and then data visualization. So it's not just storing away information, but to be able to figure out what those patterns might be, including for individuals that, I mean, let's face it, one of the easiest things that you can do when you're sort of, you know, if you're a caseworker working case by case by case, is taking a look at how many successful transactions we've conducted with a consumer, and then suddenly there is a problem like, oh, that's not my address. Well, it was your address the last 11 times that you bought cat food and we sent it to you. So there are lots of things to unlink with that. And during the pandemic period, there were a lot of really, I mean, I have to say, winning customer service initiatives out there, myself included. Speaking of cat food, I ordered something from Chewy, didn't want it. They just said, keep it. You know, we don't really have a facility right now for taking it back. So I was able to donate the item, but I'm also not gaming the system either. You know, whereas somebody else might say, well, gee, I'm going to order a flat screen TV and see if I get two. And so that's why I think it's really important to have your eye on that part of your transactional business. Because if you don't, then you look up at the end of the year and there's this ugly problem that you have to explain.
Let's talk about speed of adoption for a moment. Fraud is happening with the speed of light, and it seems that the smart way forward is to focus on fraud solutions that work everywhere and can be leveraged quickly. Erica, are you seeing the shift at ACI and adapting to these changing dynamics?
Yes. You know, in our view, ACI is at the forefront of technology, innovation, and change. The way that we do this in a quick way is we have designed and developed our platforms in an orchestrated open way to plug in many different connectors, plug in many different digital identity solutions and technology. It's really about having the ability to, you know, as I'm saying in a non-technical way, plug in one cord and plug in another, or maybe plug in multiple cords very quickly. Our ability to deploy and enhance and add not only different alternative payment methods, digital wallets, different acquirers, different identity solutions, didn't keep up with different mandates for different countries. It really is about having APIs that are configurable that multiple end users can drag and drop and implement and deploy. It really brings not only merchants, but also keeps up with mandates in a scalable way. So it's really about having the ability to configure things in a UI that does not have a steep learning curve. That's really what our focus has been, because we've seen really this fast adoption of all these different payment methods and mandates and ways that we have to authenticate and verify consumers. And it has to be flexible by, you know, the demographic. It has to be flexible by the payment method. The flexibility is endless, right? So it really does have to be orchestrated, and it needs to work across all the different channels that our merchants have, or our billing clients have, or our banking clients have. Why is that? You know, the lines of e-commerce or marketplaces are omni, they've all blurred. We see this time and time again. And for example, one of our large grocers in the United States, a huge amount of their business is now all buy online, pick up in store, where the food is put into a locker. And the consumers are not that often going into the store. Or equally, we have very large retailers that are now enabling consumers to check themselves out on their mobile phone and not even see a clerk at a desk, because some of the merchants are having trouble staffing. You know, in those areas, ACI is at the forefront of not only providing the consumer and the merchant with different ways to pay, even the mobile app, but doing it in a way that there's really no friction and that they have a multitude of the payment options that they want to have, but at really a cost optimal way that reduces friction and enables that consumer to have a positive experience.
We've discussed a lot of problems related to digital identity and authentication. What is ACI working on to rise up to meet these challenges?
As we were sharing earlier, it's really about having a platform that has the orchestration capability, the easy to plug in and adapt and configure in a UI to which multitude of individuals can do. That is not anything that requires a code change or a deployment or a delivery. Everything must be configurable in a UI that multitude of end users can use on a very scalable level. And that we know that one geography has many different requirements than others, so it needs to be scalable and configurable with keeping those, you know, geographic or payment type or channel type requirements aligned, and enabling the merchants and the consumers to accept that a payment without little to no friction.
And as we come to an end, you know, Erica, if listeners want to know more about ACI, what's the best way for them to contact you for more information?
Oh, we would love the opportunity. You can connect with us on our ACI website, or you can connect with us via LinkedIn. We welcome the opportunity to meet with you and discuss your future about increasing your approval rates. What does 1% mean to you is the big question.
Eric and John, thank you so much again for joining us and for sharing such great insights. We hope to have you back on soon.